Okay, I just want to finish this chapter of the previous lecture by the following remark. We said yesterday that we are interested classically only in the observable functions, the Dirac observables. And here we are trying to quantize non-observables like the Q's and P's, which are not Dirac observables, on a certain Hilbert space. And then we try to find the invariant or the physical Hilbert space by carrying out this procedure. So you may ask, why don't we just take the algebra of observable functions, the Poisson algebra of observable functions, and then quantize this algebra and then do physics with it? The answer is that there are two problems. The first problem is that this algebra of observable functions is very hard to compute. I gave you some formulas yesterday, but it's rather complicated formula. Right? It has this infinite power series with multiple Poisson brackets. So imagine trying to put operator heads on this. There's severe operator ordering problems. Secondly, these functions are only locally defined in phase space, and usually we don't know how to quantize systems or functions on phase space which are not globally defined. So these are two problems which somehow prevent you from doing this quantizing the algebra of observables directly. This is why Dirac invented this constraint quantization program, where you first construct a kinematical Hilbert space where things live which are not observable, and then you find the physical Hilbert space. So this is a way of starting the quantization and avoiding this problems that you may have with observables. Of course, the problem comes back later because you want to compute spectra of these operators, I mean, of observable operators. But at least you can get with the quantization to some point where you can meaningfully discuss these questions. OK, so having done this, we start in the next chapter, which is the new variables. For GR, and the names to mention here are Ashtekar, first of all, and foremost, who actually discovered this the convenience of these variables, but also Barbero, Emirzi, and other people. But first and foremost, Ashtekar, and the virtue. The history of these new variables is kind of funny because what happened was that since the 60s, people tried to quantize, maybe along these lines of this quantization program that I just outlined, this ADM phase space. And the problem was that, in some sense, it was the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. What's the Wheeler-DeWitt equation? It's the quantization of the Hamiltonian constraint, which was given to us as 1 over that Q. PAB, well, now I have to really write this in terms of the fundamental variables, QAC, QBD, minus 1/2 QAB, QCD, PAB, PCD, minus determinant of Q times R3. Now, everybody knows how the Ricci curvature curvature scalar depends on Q. So it depends on Q and the inverse of Q and first and second derivatives. Then there's this non-polynomial dependence on Q here and here. And then there's this polynomial term. So now imagine you put operator heads here. And you try, what people try to do, you define PAB by I times H bar times 16 pi G. Times delta by delta QAB of x. So you work in a representation where wave functions depend on Q, and you define QAB hat of Q by this formula. Then you can imagine what kind of operator problems not only you face operator ordering problems, but also because of the appearance of second functional derivatives here, you will get terms which are infinite, which depend on the delta distribution evaluated at zero. So there's huge amount of divergence associated with this operator. So if you put hats here, c psi, and put a hat here, psi equal to zero, this is called the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. This couldn't be been made sense of in terms of these ADM variables.
However, if you multiply everything by square root of the determinant of Q, then I think that all those non-polynomial...
You can get rid of the non-polynomiality, but you will increase this problem by several factors. So you get not only the delta function at zero, but also powers of the delta function at zero. So that was the problem for a long time, that you could not make sense out of this operator using these ADM variables. Then it was discovered by Ashtekar that if you take certain new variables, which I will define in a moment, that you can simplify this constraint a lot. I mean, you can make it polynomial if you do what Jurek just said. You just multiply it by a certain power of the determinant of Q, and you can make it a fourth order polynomial, which is not worse than in Young-Mills theory, which is also the Hamiltonian of Young-Mills theory is also a fourth order polynomial in the basic fields. But the problem with this the price is that these variables had to be complex valued in order that you can achieve this degree of simplicity of the constraint. Now, if you make it complex valued, then one could not find Hilbert space representations of this for these variables. I will not. I mean, if you're interested, I can tell you more why this is the case. But it just is the case that, I mean, it's a fact of life that still today nobody can find could find a Hilbert space representation for these complex valued variables. So then Ashtekar and Isham went along and let's just take the variables to be real, just for fun, let's say, and try to find a Hilbert representation for these real-valued variables. And they didn't find a representation yet, but they found a nice measure theoretic framework. Then it was Ashtekar and Jurek who actually could use this measure theoretic framework and put a measure on this measure space, and then they found a nice Hilbert space representation for these real valued new variables or Ashtekar variables. However, if you use the real valued variables, then still this constraint looks horrible. So one could ask the question, what did you gain? What was gained is that one can rephrase general relativity in terms of connection variables. And there's a huge body of work on Young-Mills theories and also Hamiltonian formulation of Young-Mills theories. And one can take over the techniques that these people have developed. And that's the real virtue of these variables. So this is, and also one could make progress on the quantization of this Wheeler-DeWitt equation. So this is what I'm going to introduce now. And I will try to make this as painless as possible. Which means that I just define things and claim things, and then I leave it to you to prove it. So I define. So we had ADM variables QAB, which is a three metric, and I can imagine that a three metric can be derived from a trialed field. Delta JK. This is just a Kronecker delta. EJA and EKAB. EJ A is a triad. And now I define a field EA J, which is square root of that Q times EA J. And EA J is the inverse of the, well, this is actually, I should say precisely, this is a co-triad. This is the triad, and it's defined by being the inverse of the co-triad. EJ A EA K delta JK. Now, we already were using the this thing D, which was the covariant differential compatible with QAB. So it knows how to act on spatial tensors like the three metric, the extrinsic curvature, or our field PAB, the momentum conjugate to QAB. So now I extend this this covariant differentiable to things like this, which have mixed indices. Like the A, which runs from 1 to 3, is a tensor index, but J, which also runs from 1 to 3, is an internal index. And you see that this triad field here is a 3 by 3 matrix without symmetry, so it has 9 components, while QAB has only 6 components. So there's a symmetry here, a gauge symmetry, and it's obviously the symmetry group is SO3. So, and these indices here, they take values in the Lie algebra of SO3. So SO3 indices. So now we want to define or extend the covariant differentiable for objects which also have this other kind of indices. So we define this, for example, the covariant differentiable of the cotriad to be, the partial derivative EJ minus gamma AB C EC J. This is the Levi-Civita connection. This is the thing that is covariant with QAB. Plus an additional term, which is gamma A K epsilon J K L E B L. So if you take another field which doesn't have this kind of internal indices, this term will be gone. If you take a field which has just internal indices, then this term will be gone. If you have a mixed situation, then you have this. And then by tensoring these kind of things, then you get the action of dA on arbitrary mixed tensors. Now, what you ask, what is this thing? This is called the spin connection. And to find the spin connection from the triad and the Levi-Civita connection, you require that this covariant differential is actually not only compatible with the metric, but also compatible with the cotriad. So you set this equal to 0. And from this equation, you can solve for the spin connection. Okay. I'm pulling these internal indices with the Kronecker delta, so I'm not making any differences. Thank you for this. That's a good point. So now, having done this, let me let AAJ be an SU2 connection. So I'm taking now the Lie algebra SU2 rather than SO3 because we also have in applications to couple spinners or spinner fields to the theory. So I'm extending SO3 to SU2, the universal covering group of SO3. So at the level of this vector representations, the two are the same, but for more general representations, spinner representations, I do have to use SU2. So I consider AAJ and also this spin connection as SU2 connections. And now I consider EAJ and AAJ as a canonical pair. A canonical pair, meaning that the following happens. AAJ of X, AB K of Y is 0. The Poisson bracket between these two connections is 0. The Poisson bracket between two electric fields is 0. But the Poisson bracket between E and A is the usual thing. So it's given precisely by 8 pi times the Newton constant times some parameter beta times delta AB, delta JK, delta of X and Y. And this parameter here is called the Bemirzi parameter. Now, I want to tell you what the relation is between these A's and E's and the extrinsic curvature and the three metric. Define QAB of E and A. So these are going to be functions of E and A, given by EJ AB. Divided by determinant of E. And KAB, I should call it maybe differently. Let's call it pi AB is equal to AAJ minus gamma AJ times. Well, actually, let me do it like this. Makes my life simpler. QAB of E and A is just EJ A EJ B. So this is just the formula that I have there. But now I consider EJ A as a function of E. And what this function is, you can easily find from this formula. You just invert this formula. Using, and this you can show this from these two equations, that determinant of Q is determinant of E, the absolute value of the determinant of E. So I know that this triad or the co-triad is a function of E, so this is a certain function of E and A. I take EJB, I divide by beta. Okay, and then I symmetrize in A and B.
Is there summation with respect to
A? Yeah, repeated indices are always summed over. So also this is a function of E and A. And the final thing I need is the following. CJ is given by DA EAJ plus epsilon JKL AAK EAL. Now finally, I need, actually this is bad notation, so. Let me just make primes everywhere. Q prime, K prime, and then I also form P prime. P prime AB is just determinant of Q prime square root Q prime AC Q prime BD minus QA prime AB Q prime CD of K prime CD. So now this is another complicated function of E and A. And now the claim is as follows. And this will cost you a couple of pages of calculation to prove this. Dilemma is that Q prime or P prime, Q prime AB of X, Q prime CD of Y, and P prime AB of X, P prime CD of Y is equal to 0. P prime AB of X, Q prime CD of Y is 16 pi a g delta a delta b c d delta of x and y. And all of this up to terms proportional to c j. So what does this mean? This is exactly the Poisson bracket structure of our ADM theory, up to these terms proportional to this CJ. And CJ, takes exactly the form of an SU2 Gauss law. If I take this to 0, this is the Gauss law is in an SU2 Young-Mills theory. Moreover, what you can show is that CJ of X, CJ of Y is epsilon JKL delta of X and Y CL of X. So this if you consider the Gauss law as a constraint, like as one does also in Maxwell theory, then the Gauss constraint closes among itself. It also has the following property that CJ of X of Q prime AB is equal to 0, and also equal to 0 is CJ of X with P prime AB of Y for any Y and for any Y. So what does this mean? It means that with respect to the Gauss law, Q prime and P prime are observables. They are gauge invariant. They are SU2 gauge invariant. And the Poisson brackets between these primed objects is proportional to the Gauss law. So if I draw the situation like this, then the following has happened. So this is the space of all possible A's and E's. And I can constrain this the space of A's and E's to a surface, like this, for example. And this surface is where CJ of X is equal to 0 for all J and X. Now, this constraint generates gauge transformations, SU2 gauge transformations. So that means that not all points in this hypersurface are distinguishable from each other, only the functions or the points which somehow don't change. Or in other words, the orbits on this hypersurface. Now, the fact that these functions are invariant under these gauge transformations that I have written here means that there are nice coordinates for this orbit. And this orbit space is isomorphic with these, or is coordinatized, let's say. It's coordinatized by Q prime AB and P prime AB. So what all of this means is that I have extended my phase space. I have, before I had symmetric tensor fields, QAB and PAB. So these are 6 degrees of freedom per point. Now I have EAJs and AAJs, which are 9 fields per point. But I have imposed on this phase space 3 additional constraints. So the 3 constraints can be used in order to, let's say, eliminate 3 degrees of freedom here. And also, the constraints generate unphysical motions on the phase space. These physical motions can be used in order to gauge away 3 additional components of AAJ. And this is, if you do this, then you end up with the gauge invariant content of the theory, and this can be coordinatized by Q prime and P prime. And as you can see, these Q prime and P prime have exactly the Poisson bracket structure or the, of our old ADM phase space. Yeah?
Where can we see the influence of this Barbera emergency parameter? Because somehow it disappeared here.
That's right, yeah. It should disappear because the ADM theory didn't depend on it.
Okay. So we only see this influence in this approach where we have the CAs and AAs.
Yeah, so it enters at this point. So there's the appearance here and here, and these two appearances just becomes, yeah. There's another question.
This is a related question, maybe. Is there a physical interpretation of this parameter on the classical level?
On the classical level, well, it's like you take, let's say, Q and P, okay, and they have canonical brackets. And you can multiply, let's say, Q by beta, and you can divide P by beta, and the Poisson brackets does not change. So it's a canonical transformation. Well, at the moment, I didn't say anything about quantization, but it may happen. And we will see that it actually does happen, that for every beta, we will get a different representation. I'm not sure, but it might be. But for sure, there's this two factor of two difference. Yeah, I'm not sure right now where exactly the, in the calculation the two comes in, but it certainly does. So one could say that if you reduce the phase space, this bigger phase space, by the Gauss constraint, you end up with the ADM formulation. So at the classical level, expanding the phase space and adding this additional constraint doesn't change the physical content of the theory. Now we need to write the constraints, the other constraints in terms of these variables. The Hamiltonian constraint and the spatial diffeomorphism constraint. So it turns out that spatial diffeo can be written as in very compact form, namely trace FAB EB, or if you like indices, FABJ, EBJ, and FAB J is equal to DA EB J 2 times plus epsilon JKL AA BKL. This is the curvature of A. The Hamiltonian constraint looks more difficult. It is given by H is equal to trace FAB EAEB divided by determinant of E plus 1 plus beta squared trace KA KB EA EB divided by determinant of E. And when I write KA, for example, or EA, let's say, without an J index, I mean by this EAJ times sigma J, where these are Pauli matrices. And KA is a function, is the following function. Of A and E, because gamma is of course a function of E. So this is a shorthand notation. So you see that if you would take this Emirsi parameter to be plus or minus the imaginary unit, then that this term would disappear. Okay, and you would have only this constraint left, this term left. But the problem with or the price for this is that A, which is in other words given by gamma plus plus beta times k, in this case would become complex valued. So the simplification of the constraint can be achieved at the price only to make the connection not an SL2 connection, but actually an SL2C connection. And this poses problems when you want to quantize the theory. What I should say is that this is not a strict equality. It also holds, and also this one, it only holds when you neglect terms plus terms proportional to Cj. And also this plus terms proportional to Cj. And this is OK because if you take all the three constraints together, Ca, C, and Cj, you can add certain constraints to the other, and you don't change the total total phase space and the total constraint surface. So this is, in four blackboards, the new variable formulation of general relativity, canonical in the canonical formulation. I could have done this differently. I could have started with a covariant action and also have arrived at this phase space. And the action that you have to take is the following one. 5 minutes. No, this I think it's okay. I started 25. Now I talk 35 minutes. I took plus 5, that's 40, and I took 5 minutes before. So one could have started from the so-called Holst action. Which is given by, in differential form now, omega ij epsilon ijk l ek vg el plus 1 over beta times omega ij ei wedge ej. This is the so-called Pallottini action. And this is a kind of topological term. It's topological in the sense that it vanishes when the equations of motion hold. Oops, I'm sorry. If you now go through the canonical Dirac analysis, you find that you have to do a lot of work because this is a system which has second-class constraints. And these come in because, omega ij is the curvature of a Lorentz connection, d omega ij plus omega ik veg omega kj. So I and j run from 1 to 3. So these are anti-symmetric. So this is 6 components. So this is an SO1,3 connection or SL2,3 connection. And when you do this 3+1 split in order to get a canonical formulation, then you will get Lorentz connections. Let's say omega aij. And these are how many? These are 3, because A takes 3 components, times 6, because this is anti-symmetric, 6 times 6, which is 18 degrees of freedom. So the canonic momentum conjugate to this also has to have 18 components. However, if you pull back the, these are tetrads now. So these are fields with a mu index, which takes also 4 values, 1, 2, 3. If you pull this back to the spatial sections, then you get a field EAI, which has 3 times 4, which is 12 components. So PAB turns out to be a certain second order polynomial built from this AAJ, and it cannot have 18 components because there are only 12 degrees of freedom involved. So 18 minus 12 components of PAJ, IJ are redundant. And this redundancy is captured by the so-called simplicity constraint. Which is a certain relation between epsilon ijk l p a p b ijk l and p a ij p b k l eta ik eta JL. So it's a second order relation between the piece, which is called simplicity constraint. You will see this simplicity constraint coming up in the spin form talks again. And this is a primary constraint, and it turns out to be second class together with the so-called SO3,1 Gauss law, which is given by DA PA IJ plus omega A I K P A K J. So if you take this constraint, the simplicity constraint and the Gauss constraint, and compute what you get, you find that it's not close, they don't close among each other. And you have to deal with second class constraints. And that's why when you solve the second class constraint, you go down from this Lorentz connection and Lorentz indices for the tetrad down to SO3 or SU2 indices. That's the physical reason for why this happens. So I think this is a very good point to stop. Thank you. No, it's a consequence of the fact that, well, if you want to know the formula, it's a consequence of the fact that PAIJ consists of two terms, epsilon ABC, EB, EC, KL, epsilon IJKL, plus a term which involves 1 over beta, EBI, ECJ. And you can compute this quantity and this quantity from it, which is, this is a fourth order expression in these fields, and this is a fourth order expression in these fields, and there's a certain linear relation between these two. So it just comes from the fact that these are 3 times 4 independent degrees of freedom, but PAIJ is labeled such that it's apparently 18 degrees of freedom, which is not the case. It's not, there's a, only these 12 fields are independent of each other.